here we go. It's called Chris Kelly, the chairman, and he is on his way. And he advised us to go ahead and start the meeting. And so we'll start the meeting. And the agenda indicates the first matter of business is a review and approval of the February 10th, 2016 meeting minutes. And so let's consider that. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes as prepared?
No comment.
All right, so then with no additions or corrections to the February 10th meeting, we'll consider those minutes approved. Then we'll take up the second item, which is the continued street infrastructure discussion. And I'm not sure that I see item three any different than I see item two.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Item two says continued street infrastructure discussion. And item three says discussion of streets infrastructure. So it appears that maybe those are the one and the same, and that the delete button didn't get hit when they highlighted one of them. So let's take after that. And I think it's worthy to note that Cody has been kind enough to continue the draft of the street recommendations, and we would thank you for that, Cody. And that maybe what we should do until Chris gets here is Cody, do you might have you overview what your thought process was as you made another revision of the draft?
Yeah, thanks, John. Well, I took some of the stuff from Dave Nichols' overview, and I was trying to consider what exactly we were trying to present to council on this and what exactly our task is and what exactly the goal of our recommendation or narrative is. And I think they wanted an overview and a state of the infrastructure, and then respectively each individual specific infrastructure, and this is streets. So I know Dave Nichols' previous outline had been pretty specific to the maintenance part of, and then he had touched on some of the capital improvement projects. In this draft, I tried to broaden it out and try to get a little bit deeper into non-motorized transportation. That's part of the transportation that we're supposed to look at, I assume. The development fees, and which is a later topic of discussion, but I also had some talking points in here about development fees, since that's a significant portion of the funding for new capital improvement projects. Also, I tried to touch on, and I don't know if I did a very good job on it, but I was trying to step through this, and maybe for my own good too, on like how exactly we as a community, not just City of Columbia, but also specifically City of Columbia, comes up with a list of projects that need to get done and goes from the initial identifying a need to the CATSO transportation study organization plan to the Columbia CIP program to being approved in the city's fiscal year budget. So, you know, we have a lot of documents, a lot of different departments that help with that, and I was trying to outline the process that goes through. And then also I didn't fully fill this narrative out, but then I hit the financial part of it, where the breakdown of where the funding comes from as far as, like I previously mentioned, development fees, but also the transportation sales tax, the community or the capital improvement sales tax, federal funding from the community block or community development block grant, FHWA non-motorized grant, and stuff like that. And some of those, a lot of those funds are also directed to different parts of the transportation infrastructure, like the airport, rail system, transit stuff, which isn't really in our scope of work. But so I didn't, so it's kind of tough to try to say more should be allocated to one or the other. So I guess we really can't speak to that as much of the allocation of each of those. But just identifying it so that whoever reads this can see how we're doing it, and the state of whether we have enough funding with the current allocations and the income of funding to get done what the city thinks we should be able to get done, or what we should be doing to keep up with growth in the city as far as new projects, maintenance of streets specifically. Then I have a list of talking points, which I figure we can go through item by item. But once Chris gets here, I think it would probably be better to go through those. I also was looking for some direction from everybody else, what they saw, they liked, or was missing, or where the gaps were in my thought process. Overview.
Cody, I thought you did a good job, definitely as a rough draft. And secondly, I have to agree with what I think you're saying. The fact that we're covering some things and not others with the airport and so on and so forth, and there is no necessary line in the sand. So either we can need to define that, or, I mean, it is somewhat defined, but it's like we're kind of only looking at half of a full glass, and it's kind of difficult in that sense.
So then would it be a matter of the task force declaring that the airport and the bus system is not a part of?
Yeah, I would say we say it's not a part of our scope of work, and whether we think it should be looked into or not, or maybe is, you know, you're looking at the funding that is allocated to streets and whether we think that there is enough. You know, one of the ways we could get more
is take it away from
I mean, maybe we recommend, hey, we look at maybe the allocation should change or something, if that's one way to gain funding for street maintenance or new streets or something. But same, I mean, I don't think we should make a recommendation to do that, but just, you know, I mean, that could be a recommendation. And I think I spoke to that, maybe I don't know if that's part of CATSO's role. And I mean, they're not just a city organization. It's also Boone County, and MoDOT has stake in that group. So, and maybe this is just my ignorance of how the exact fine details of the process works. So.
But if the splits change, I mean, right now we look at the funding based on the splits up today, but if somehow the council's change those splits and pushes more money to the airport or the bus system, what will suffer is the road. So I think we need to at least state that, you know, based on our review, that the funding seems appropriate if the splits stay the same and don't change. Because something's going to suffer if you take that money away.
And what, you know, if the airport and the bus system removed, then it would seem appropriate that we'd have to make some recommendation as to how that would be a substitute funding have to be created to.
I guess that's a good point. I was thinking maybe staff could help us. How exactly is the allocation decided today? Like, is it just staff and I mean, council makes the ultimate say on what the allocation is with the budget, but do you guys say, hey, we need more? Do you guys talk internally amongst yourself between the airport and the transit guys and say, you know, we need a little bit more, we need a little bit less? Or how did it come to 60, 18, and 22, for example, in the transportation sales tax?
some of the growth. Some goes toward transit, some goes toward airports. And then that's, you know, basically talked about between myself, Dave, and the city manager. And then they make a recommendation to council and they vote on it. And so that's something that's done through the budget process. But we don't determine it. Council does. I mean, that's how that's set. So,
yeah.
But it's historically, it's been set that way for a long time.
You would set the recommendation.
Pardon?
The
city manager makes a recommendation to council city council.
And that's on an annual basis or semi-annual or?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, because it depends on the projects. You know, we're trying to invest, I think, around $40 million in the airport runways and those kind of things.
Right.
And so it's going to take a chunk of change to get our match through these next few years. So.
Okay, so given that concludes that. Do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
I apologize. I went home after work and laid down for a minute. And my wife didn't wake me up. And
it's all her fault.
So the bottom line is, it's my wife's fault.
Sure.
That's a tardy.
You know you're being recorded, don't you?
That's all right.
Where we are, Chris, we've Cody's highlighting what he's done in the draft here. And there were.
Let me see if I can catch up. Cody's.
Cody, did you include potential property tax increase in your potential recommendations? Did I miss that somewhere?
I didn't speak to property tax.
Might add it on there as someone could just discuss.
So what currently property tax does the city of Columbia? I guess I would need to know more about what exactly.
Well, it says the current city mill rate has been held at 41% for more than 10 years. So it could be increased to 45% without a public vote. This is bringing an additional $750,000 a year.
So I think we're starting to get a little maybe ahead of ourselves. So I guess do we have a good idea on what the gap is between the funding up with growth?
I don't know.
Let's see. Well, I think part of the answer there, Cody, is that Dave helped me out. Is the 10-year plan? That's balanced, right? Or is it 15? Or and it is. It's balanced, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Right. And so. And there's a whole variety of sources. Yeah.
The 10-year ballot was projected around $63 million over 10 years for public safety and capital projects for the streets. And we have about $99 million in projects, and the remaining comes from development fees, which is something you've addressed, and then the county road tax that the county collects and distributes to the various cities within the county, and that makes up the remaining. And those monies are only can only be used for the roads, and then obviously the capital is for the public safety projects. And of the $63 million, $22 is earmarked for public safety, fire trucks, municipal center, and fire stations and things like that. So, but all those were identified in the ballot before it was voted on, you know, the different projects.
That's what's in this summary that he gave us.
So, yeah, that's the capital improvement tax.
Right.
So when that tax was, is that an ordinance or how is that?
It was a voted on in August.
Yeah, it was voted on, but like where's the full ordinance? Or is it an ordinance or is it just a?
We took an ordinance to council to put the ballot, or, you know, to put these
and
projects
so
on the ballot.
So when it's approved by vote, then it's recorded in what form, or like, I guess. So it's just the ordinance, and whether the, you know, you, the ordinance is only in effect if it passes the ballot issue, or I guess I just don't understand exactly how that.
I'm not sure that it is adopted by ordinance. I guess the projects.
You have a list of projects, but how is that enforceable if you never recorded it or it's not an ordinance? It was voted on, but where is that? How is that your, the authority? I mean, I guess, not I mean, sure. I'm sure it is that, but.
When we take the ordinance to council to put it on the ballot, once the ballot's passed, those are all public documents, and it's not, you know, it, this is what the money's going to be spent for. So there's no ordinance that says each project, then we bring them forth in a public hearing, and we have a public hearing because it's not detailed enough. You know, we don't know exactly what's going to get built. We have an estimate of what's going to be built.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Then that's where the public process starts, is each project is brought forward and have a public hearing, an ordinance to acquire, and a bid call. And so there's three times the council looks at it.
But I think that list was put toward council and to initiate the ballot to go on in August.
But it's not an ordinance that they adopt. These are the projects. It just goes with it when they adopt to put it on the ballot.
Do they see the annual CIP or your project list? So they get a chance to look and review that as well. So
every budget year.
Anything changes every budget year.
Every year.
So if we're not bringing enough revenue in because of sales tax and we have to defer some of the work, they're aware of that.
And some things actually get deferred even at the sales tax. You know, you may not be able to get a property in a timely manner, or it may happen, and so it slips on the schedule. But some usually comes forward to take its place. How many projects on the list? Do you remember how many?
John's got it here.
So, I mean, they're all spelled out in there what we're going to do.
Here.
And there's annual projects in there, Cody, that there's no project defined for that money. It just says it's an annual project. And so we have this money that we can use for things that come up through the 10 years that we didn't anticipate.
Like cost share projects.
Right.
You know, when MoDOT has an opportunity to cost share, or the county. And so we have annual monies then. That's not already earmarked to specific projects, but those come up and those fulfill a need that we can cost share and leverage the dollars to.
Let's see, is it a fair question what transpired the prior 10 years in terms of meeting the intention of the.
We did all the projects. We have, I think, one left currently that's not under construction, and that's the grasslands that we're continuing to work on.
We're in right-of-way acquisition right now.
Yeah.
So that's
okay.
our last commitment of the whole five.
And I think to help everybody out, if I can't remember which meeting you gave this to us, but it's the renewing the quarter-cent sales tax for capital improvement projects, and it has the ballot language, and then it has the quarter-cent sales tax extension project list. It goes to the public safety, which you was talking about, the $22,788,000. Major street maintenance upgrades, $51,780,000.
I've got that document.
Okay, and then it's detailed in this attached document.
But it just looked like it wasn't in any ordinance form. That's why I was just questioning.
What makes it binding, I guess?
Yeah.
The ballot makes it binding for us. Now, council can always move the money somewhere else. There's nothing that says they can't. But we've always, you know, cautioned we need to spend it where we said we were going to spend
it. That's what people voted on, and that's what we need to finish the commitment on. So,
and that list has came up with you guys through.
No, we actually had some public input through that.
Citizen
input, various meetings with council. Several public processes to identify these projects.
You guys have very many complaints about, oh, you guys didn't put this on the list, or why aren't you doing this project as far as bigger projects? I mean, I know, I guess,
got
Katrina.
They want done somewhere else, that's for sure. But a lot of it's driven by traffic, you know, how much traffic you have on a particular road, whether it's congestion, traffic accidents. A lot of those things, data goes into it, is just not picked off the list because we want to do it. There's actual data that we look at and decide.
That's what I was kind of, yeah, assume that was the case.
It's inclusive of sidewalks.
Yeah, we have more money this than the last ballot, probably almost $5 million over the 10 years. One's in maintenance, and one, I think, is in new sidewalks. Yeah. There's two categories, if I remember.
That's right. Yep.
Well, I don't know, Chris, you might have some input. I would be interested in seeing what people have to say about my narrative, but I guess we could go through these talking points. I kind of envisioned we go one by one and either say, we don't have enough information, let's hold this, or, yeah, I like this, we need to finalize the language or something.
If you're asking me, I think that's exactly the right thing to do. I think the narrative captured very well in the narrative, but I think our recommendations are ultimately much more important.
Yeah.
Why don't we just start with one?
Yeah.
Okay, with one, it seems that we need to remove within the city of Columbia. It seems to me it ought to read, it is recommended that the city encourage annexation and development to promote economic growth. You can't have annexation. Yeah, within.
I agree. yeah, there's probably a lot of typos like this.
Well, no, that's not a criticism.
And this one is like most of these, I guess, are kind of to get them out there and see what the task force thinks about this thought process of do we agree with that statement? I mean, I personally think city should be encouraging annexation for the reasons I've listed, maybe others. I know they have a Columbia Imagine plan that has an urban service area, which actually recommends we don't build outside of that urban service area. So it kind of is like, let's grow, but not beyond these limits. And, I mean, they have reasons because we don't have the infrastructure or this or that. I guess it's mainly because of the infrastructure probably is not there is why they don't want to expand beyond just this compact area that's immediately adjacent to the city. But I think, you know, if you can design it, if you can build it to increase the infrastructure and you can make it work, then we should be encouraging, you know, annexation.
Here's my question about that. You say we should do it to retain taxes and fees and avoid losing revenue. But isn't there a whole nother reason? The other reason is to kind of manage rational integrated planning. So you don't get...
You maintain some control over the adjacent land to the city.
Yeah, and you get some consistency. You don't have subdivisions going up with widely varying degrees of compliance with what will ultimately be or may ultimately be city responsibility. I mean, is that...
Yeah, I agree. That is I think that's a great reason.
What do you think about that?
I guess it's a good suggestion. You don't want substandard development to occur and you annex it later.
So how do we say it?
Well, let's see, and there's some existing city ordinances that guide the council as to the acceptance of annexed areas.
John, I think that's true, but I think what happens is... And correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I think what happens is we've had subdivisions, and then over time the pressure for annexation builds, and even though they didn't build the whole thing to standard, what happens is they end up annexed anyway. Am I wrong about that? Or maybe that used to happen and doesn't happen anymore?
It definitely used to happen.
Okay.
But not sewer.
They don't have sewer.
Right. That's what I was, that's what I was getting at.
And I'll use El Chaparral as an example. It was built in the county, and then the lagoon failed or whatever, and they hooked it up through a development, or not development agreement, a territorial agreement with us and Boone County Regional Sewer District to our sewer. And so it's still not annexed, but it's hooked up to our sewer. We've had other areas that, well, Prairie View, I know, it was hooked up and it got annexed, and so those things do happen. But they, a lot of times the city grows toward them. It's not right at the cusp of the city limits. It's not because it touches the city limits that it gets done. It just has a failing sewer and a lot of times gets hooked up.
How do those fees break down for El Chaparral then, if it's not annexed into the city as far as the sewer?
They can pay 1.5 times the rate to the city customer. Because they're outside the city.
Well, let's see.
So.
Yeah.
there is a policy resolution the council passed. I don't remember. I think maybe back in the 80s that requires properties to annex or enter into an annexation agreement in order to connect to the city sewer system. That may have some of the talking points that you're looking for right now in that policy resolution. I'd be happy to send that to Carol to distribute.
Sure, but isn't that the reverse? I mean, they can't get the sewer unless they annex.
Per current policy, that's...
But isn't that... If you annex the property before they built the subdivision, then you would not get that problem in the first place.
That's pretty much what that resolution addresses.
Yeah, it kind of wants...
You want to develop, and the city sewer is right there. In order to hook to it, you've got to annex, and then you got to develop the city standards.
But then you have competing different things where... The city doesn't want to annex, or they make it very hard to annex because they want you to improve, make a bunch of improvements, or I guess I was going towards this to set a background that let's try to work towards getting these annexations as opposed to throwing up a whole bunch of reasons why the city doesn't want to annex these properties. Like the sewer policy resolution is a great thing that's just kind of to me pushes the council, or should be pushing the council, to annex properties, because centralized sewer treatment is a great thing. We don't want a whole bunch of disparate sewer. I mean, even though the sewer district is great, but the city should be wanting everybody to be in their sewer.
Isn't it interesting how this first one once again points to the integrated nature of all these infrastructure issues? You can't. It's virtually impossible to separate the question of roads from the question of sewers.
Yeah, I know. We're talking about sewers when we.
Well, but it's just reality.
It is.
What if we do this? What if we get the language that these guys are offering, and then see if we build that in to your number one.
Yeah, definitely use it as reference or as, yeah, part of the language.
That document was drafted back in the 80s, you said? I'm just because I'm thinking in specifically to, like, El Chaparral, that was what, early? That was
early 90s.
So that example would have been prior to that agreement? I mean, well, that was...
El Chaparral was served by its own treatment facility.
If you could
do that in the county today, you could build a treatment facility if you could get it permitted through DNR,
mm-hmm.
And that would kind of... You're not asking to connect to city sewer at that point.
Well, that's just a lot harder nowadays than it was in the 70s.
Definitely is.
Yeah. Really do that.
But I think that resolution was in the 80s. It may have been the 90s, but I'll send it to Carol.
Yeah, that would
and then she can distribute it.
Document to have, I think.
I think it also, you know, if you annex, the city can also help control the major collectors and arterial streets, you know, that are shown on the CATSO plan or on our major thoroughfare plan. And they have some say in it, opposed to these fringe out just right outside the urban service area, which is the city limits in some cases. So kind of the city loses out on some of that review and consultation, I think, would sometimes. I know, for example, I'm working on a subdivision with the county on Route K and Nursery School, and it touches the city, but you know, there's a collector shown that goes through that on the CATSO plan that connects up to Route K. I mean, eventually Boone's Point, I think, is in the city, and it touches the city on like two sides. So they're weighing, you know, what's it worth to try to annex to the city, and, you know, the city's saying we don't have enough sewer capacity or it's going to be expensive to get sewer there, and they've got the sewer district.
They're saying that, or the developer? City or both?
The developer is contemplating whether to develop in the city or the county.
And right.
Due to some of the obstacles of annexing to the city, they think it'll be cheaper and easier to develop in the county. Now, they haven't actually made any formal submission yet, but, you know, there's collectors going adjacent to that and a collector just to the south of that. While it's in the county now, I feel like that's the direction everybody wants to build. I mean, that's the direction the city's going. I don't know if that made a lot of sense. I was just kind of rambling. We can go to the next.
I don't think we get anywhere if we don't ramble a little bit, though.
Okay. I got one other suggestion on the first topic. The last sentence says avoid losing revenue to development within the county or surrounding areas. Change that to avoid losing revenue to development that occurs outside of city limits.
Sure.
Yeah.
I like that.
So if we suggest wasn't it the Tribune just like Tuesday that was talking about the fire station need? What is it like? It's a ridiculous figure to get a fire station up and running. But if we're encouraging annexation, then we've got it's more than just a couple of roads and sewers. Am I right?
No, you're absolutely right.
More costs involved.
There's huge issues with the relationship between the two fire departments, and that's only one of the between the county and city. Roads and bridges and rural electric co-op in the city, and
they've got a territorial agreement between the two fire departments.
Well, and it just seems like, you know, how you start with a circle and then the ripples get larger and larger and larger. So, I mean, the city is just, it's exponentially getting, our boundaries are getting so much larger. So, you know, a random subdivision here and there, but you're expanding the adjacent property, the connectivity to, I don't know.
You're absolutely correct, but where does it go?
And looking at the CIP document that Cody attached, has a number of places where it wants to maybe make changes to the annexation policy because of some of those things, right?
The Columbia Imagine mm-hmm. policy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a lot of recommendations in there. And, yeah, you're right.
CIP's Capital Improvement Project, isn't it?
Program, yeah.
Is there a nickname for the Columbia Imagined document?
I think it's just Columbia Imagined.
It's too much to say.
Yeah. I mean, and that goes to another thing I say down here, so maybe we will just wait, but evaluating the appropriateness of new development based on short and long-term infrastructure costs and burdens on public infrastructure and services. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. Yeah, and that's something that, I mean, has always been an item of interest when you have big or controversial things that are requesting annexation. It always comes up, well, what's the actual cost of annexing this that the city, fire and police and roads and what sewer or whatever, versus how much is being brought in by this new development through taxes and fees and all that stuff.
And versus what's the cost of not annexing?
Yeah, and what do you, yeah.
The cost of not annexing is always invisible in the beginning, but it's nonetheless real.
Okay. Is there anybody else want to talk about one? Anything else? I think we need to refine this, maybe get that sewer policy resolution, see what it says that we can support or use to develop what this recommendation is for encouraging annexation. And if we have specifics on why we don't want to, or I assume nobody wants to discourage annexation completely, but if somebody thinks there's reasons we should limit the amount we annex or put some kind of qualification on annexation based on this, that might be something we could look at too.
My whole thinking on annexation is driven by because I used to live in Katy Lake. And Katy Lake subdivision has a big piece underneath it between Katy Lake and Chapel Hill that's not annexed. And what it meant over time was the little temporary or intermittent creek that ran down there was running with sewage. And it was a product of that it was so hard to annex. What's the name of the subdivision that I'm talking about? You know, if you go around, you know, you have the big curve in, what's the street that I'm talking about?
Grant Lane.
Yes. Yeah. And that little creek that's between Maple Bluff and Katy Lake is a sewage problem. It has been for a long time. And probably it's a result of failing to annex, isn't it?
And Mr. Grant's property is not in the city limits?
No,
because he made that a requirement.
He made a deal with the city, right, a long time ago?
Yeah, and his property is not in the city limits. It's along Grant Lane there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have heard of people being opposed to using sewer as an annexation tool, primarily because the sewer treatment plant, the collection system was not built with city tax money. It's built by user fees. Government grants, actually owned by the people connected to the sewer rather than the city of Columbia. And so you oughtn't to deny somebody in the county the opportunity to connect to the public sewer system because they're not in the city limits, for what it's worth.
Contrary to what, like, DNR would be?
I think DNR would support that. I have previously.
Because usually they say, you know, you have to do a cost-benefit analysis, and if there's public sewer to connect to that's cheaper or relatively the same cost as doing a separate on-site or other type of system, then you have to connect to the central public system.
And they may favor that, but not at 1.5 times the cost.
But not at the 1.5. Oh. So what do you, so you're saying they shouldn't have to pay extra, or they? I thought you were saying they shouldn't be able to connect at all.
Oh, they should be encouraged to connect, but not held ransom to annex.
Yeah, and that's the case a lot of times, I feel like.
Oh, you're saying they should connect whether they annex or not?
Yes.
I get it.
At
yeah.
the same cost.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing. It probably would go towards the sewer part of our discussion.
That would improve the public health.
That's a really good point. What about two?
Typo, the third word. R-O-L-E.
Yeah. So I guess this is maybe just another thing that I want to understand better. I kind of touched on it when I said my overview, but so what is the relationship between the CIP and CATSO? I mean, CATSO has a list of projects that have to be done, and it's in their transportation plan. It says it's physically constrained, where supposedly you've got to have enough funding to do all this within the next 25 or 35 years or whatever.
It's just a planning document only.
But it has no real teeth or anything. I mean, you guys aren't obligated to do anything on that list.
No, what it does, it lays out the road network. And so when properties come in to be developed that has a road identified through that, then they have to build that road to that CATSO designation or
and that is
set aside the right of way.
That is written into the ordinance somehow that you have to meet that, but
yes,
it's not the list of projects. Isn't like you've got the city has to build this road by the time 2040 or whatever.
No, RCIP and CATSO are two different processes completely.
And they're not obligated
It is strictly a planning document for a road network for the future.
Is it if you build this road, you must build it, you should build it to this standard?
That's correct. It should be to that designation that CATSO gives that road designation. And so sometimes roads get upsized and sometimes roads get downsized depending on particular developments. What you try to do from a network transportation, you try to set out a grid that your arterials and then your collectors and then, you know, the neighborhood collectors and then the smaller. So it's a planning guide for as developments come in adjacent to a roadway identified in the CATSO plan, then they have to set aside right-of-ways. And sometimes there is an ordinance, as and I think you mentioned that in 22-108, that the city can participate in upsizing that road. The developer would be responsible for the local portion, and then the city can participate, and that goes in with some of those development agreements that you've talked about. And so a lot of times we will participate to get that road to the classification that's identified on CATSO if we have the funding.
And that's just based on like potential projected growth of the area?
The CATSO plan?
Yeah.
They use a
technical committee with with engineers and planners that, they do.
Road planning.
Yeah.
CATSO is, we are part of what we call an MPO, Metropolitan Planning Organization. It's defined in NEPA, National Environmental or Environment Protection Act. And so in order to be qualified for federal funding for these roads, we have to have this document, and it's done on a regional basis. And in our region, it's us, the county, and MoDOT. And so, like Jeff City has, St. Martin's and all the little burgs around it, if you're within 2 miles or a mile of the city limits of Jeff City, they have an MPO as well. So this document is a planning document, Dave's correct, but all these things are defined, and you have illustrative projects, which doesn't have money tied to it, or you don't have you something that you just put on the plan as illustrative. And so there's different definitions. They have collectors and arterials, and you know, they don't do local roads, but they get down to that collector grade. But it's all part of a federal document that lets us.
So it's kind of tied it. To
it's tied to federal money.
The federal money, which is your all's block grant, or the
mainly STP is about the only federal
STP for roads. I think FTA. It's you had FTA, It's all surface transportation stuff.
Okay.
Cody, I don't... What's the recommendation in two?
Well, so the first part was just me trying to understand it better. And and also, CATSO also has a part with the sidewalks and transit and other parts they're involved in too, I believe. So, and then also, I didn't know if that, since they are larger in the metropolitan area, and that is, you know, Columbia's growing and we have some interest, obviously we're part of the group, in, you know, the growth that will eventually be in the next 30 years or whatever. Like, how are we planning for that in the city of Columbia by itself with the airport transit system, rail system, public safety? Is there an oversight, somebody else besides staff that, like, plans or says the allocations are good or, you know, something else? Or is, I mean, I know CATSO has, they do a lot of work saying this much work needs to be done. These are all the projects that need to be done. This is what needs to be done. They have a transit document. They have all these other documents. But does the city have a document that kind of, I mean, I know they do for each individual one, but is there like an oversight? Somebody, is there a committee or something?
Well, there's
no. Is it just in
planning? City planning takes care of most of this. They have paid staff that does planning documents for roads and sidewalks, and we do have master plans for these. And then with the help of the public works director and other departments, all of them get together and talk about, they have the technical committee that they go through and they make recommendations to a coordinated committee on CATSO. And then a lot of this stuff gets adopted by city council, sometimes not.
You lean on the CATSO's planning documents.
We sure do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it would be helpful?
They don't get adopted by council. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's you staff that actually makes the recommendation for council to approve.
Yes.
But they're looking to CATSO.
We're using the CATSO model.
So the future planning that they have listed out.
Right. Because we have a planning model, you know, transportation model that we look at on growth and census tracks. And I mean, a lot of data goes into this model that we have and projects traffic.
So would you see any benefit in there being some sort of, like, you know, Water and Light has their own board. I mean, some board that, you know, looks and tries to evaluate whether we're spending the money in the right places or, you know, we're getting the most we can for our money or trying to get new funding for, you know, as a group, the airport, transit, surface transportation.
I don't know about the CATSO piece of it,
it's
Cody.
The
I think
tied.
A lot of the things.
Well, yeah, regardless
annexation,
of CATSO.
Annexation stuff,
separate.
You know, there's a road leading to every new development. And some of those are unimproved. They don't have curb and gutter. That's what that means to us. It doesn't have curb and gutter. They could be a rural road. And if it's external to what's being annexed, it never gets taken care of. And so, therefore, you have things like Sinclair Road. We've developed off of it, but it never gets improved. And it's left to the city to figure out how to pay for that. That's some of the things that we struggle with. And I think that we're looking for you all to help us figure out how to fund. Those are the places that we need help.
CATSO
would not do anything with that.
With the local money?
Yeah, and I wouldn't expect, I wasn't trying to put anything onto CATSO, but... Does the city need or want help looking at, you know, like the Sinclair Road projects, having a permanent committee?
Right. And so
I don't know. I was just throwing it out there. I didn't.
Yeah.
I can see the need for a permanent revenue board.
That's the question Cody's asking effectively, isn't it?
I can see the need for a permanent revenue board or commission.
For this transportation and
all city revenue.
That's a lot. I mean, that's a pretty big, yeah, I guess.
Advise the council on options that are legal and not legal on how to increase revenue for different areas.
Well, I wasn't really thinking legal or non-legal, but.
All right, now they're researching the connection fee for electric. A board could weigh in on that.
I was more just trying to confine it to, does there need to be something for streets that could look at, you know, since all the funding, since all these the TST and the community improvement sales tax and the capital improvement sales tax and the federal grants and the developer fees all go towards, and they're kind of combined into these projects that kind of year by year fluctuates. You know, we got to do a fire station here, we got to do this street here that are big, so they kind of fluctuate. But all the funding's kind of tied, and I haven't seen a real good breakdown of, you know, the transportation sales tax was 60, 18, and 22, but when you try to break down the quarter cent capital improvement tax, it depends on what year a lot on how much it goes to public safety, it looks like, and how much it goes to something else. And then you have these non-motorized monies that, depending on the federal, we have a lot some years, or that get about, I think, was just a temporary thing, wasn't it?
It's
so we got a lot of money for a certain amount of time, but that's not a continuing thing. Okay. So I was just, if there's, I mean, do we need help? Like, I guess I don't know if I'm asking the question.
I think you're asking a wonderful question, and I don't think it, but it looks to me, I guess the question that you're asking, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, is there should be some kind of citizen advisory team, plan, on the whole question of CATSO. And
kind of, yeah.
Your question, I think, is wonderful, and I think the answer is no.
How often does CATSO meet?
Well, it wouldn't be evaluating CATSOs. It would use CATSOs maybe, but it would be evaluating just the city's projects. Yeah, okay.
I know.
Yeah, I guess I'm just missing words.
I think the people who do that, though, I think it's got to be the council, you know, the council.
I think the staff and the different departments and the council are unified enough that, I mean, they're doing it right now, obviously, and it's working. So
I answer very well. I think it's one of those things that ain't broke.
There we go.
Besides, we got a bunch of stuff that is broke. And one of the things I'm concerned about is diluting the effect of the ultimate report with things, because we got a big one down the road on this piece of paper that you outline and do well, which is the development fee question. And that's the big fish to fry here, I think.
I really wanted to ask the question, and I feel a lot better now that we've talked about it. I mean, I wasn't like really dead set to make a recommendation.
Right.
But
I think it's one of the wonderful things about asking questions is sometimes the answer is no.
Yeah.
Correct. Yep.
Am I wrong about it? I mean, I think we dump it.
I'm fine with that.
All right.
Let's see. What's has brought up a question in my mind on the, is it non-motorized, the PedNet and so on, that $21, $22 million grant?
Correct, and that's okay. One thing I do want to clarify. Getabout and PetNet are two separate entities that are not connected. PetNet is a non-profit that's been in the city for years. When we got the $22 million and the additional $6 million from the non-motorized pilot program, we branded that as Getabout. And so that is a specific set of projects that we went to the citizens and then the council to build those projects as our get about funding for non-motorized. But PedNet is its own entity and doing its own thing.
It's not tied to the city. There's not city employees.
No, there is no city employees. It's own entity with their own agenda.
It's a private advocacy group which comes to the city and advocates you should use much of the get about money. Is that?
They were strong in getting us the grant as well.
I guess my question or concern would be is that would disappear.
It is.
Okay, say it disappears, then as we would do projects, that if new projects in the future, how will the get about features be funded? Will they, how's the
Well, those type of trails and sidewalks that the Getabout's been funding now will be taken on with the CIP, which you mentioned we have sidewalk money, and then parks will be on their program for trails, and they'll just expand what Getabout created or connect what Getabout didn't get done in connecting. But what it, that whole program was set up to do was to provide options other than a motor vehicle for getting around Columbia through either walking or biking. And so having, you know, that money was to encourage other modes of transportation. And so a report went to Federal Highway to see if it was successful, and I thought it was too aggressive. In 5 years, we weren't able to get enough infrastructure on the ground to determine whether or not. But I would say after we get our whole system in place, that I would venture to say if you surveyed people, they'd probably feel like the, it benefited them in providing another option of transportation. So I just wanted to make that distinction about the two groups. They're not connected.
Yeah, thanks.
So that would be shifted to Parks and Rec? Is that?
Well, they have their own trail programs and things like that. So they're, you know, we're going to have an integrated system, and they'll either continue to expand it, connect to it, have some type of interconnectivity through trails, and then obviously sidewalks. And then, you know, with our complete streets concepts with all our roads, we add bike lanes and sidewalks. So those are also pieces of the system as well. So really the infrastructure of the roads is a component of that non-motorized. So does that make sense? Or does that answer your question?
I think it is.
Yeah.
Or as a funding mechanism, as discussed previously, we could create a every time a bike is bought, that you would pay $25 to the.
We paint a lot of bike lanes, yeah. And it comes out of our operating budget.
Well, I don't know.
I know. I was just teasing you.
I don't think anybody registered their bikes.
No, that helps. Okay. Thank you.
Look at three.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm rehashing two a little bit. One of the things I've like, we did a development going off of what I've previously done. But we did this platting and building a arterial street in the county, and the county obviously had oversight, and we built the arterial street, and then a couple years later we come back and now we annex that street into the city. So I guess my question is, what kind of input, how is the city, I guess just a common review between the city and the county allows you guys to have input on those arterial roads that get built in the city that will eventually be, or get built in the county that will eventually be in the city. And do they get built? I mean, I guess the county has to follow CATSO just like you do. I don't know if I'm really asking a question here or making a recommendation here other than just asking how.
Well, they do have their own arterial standards a little bit different.
They are different, yeah. But like as far as alignment and do they get built on this property or that property, makes a big difference.
Sure does. It's a guide for arterial until you get into the actual design and the.
So maybe the city would want it to be on this property, and then the county wants it to be on another property. So if it gets built in the county, they get it. Do you guys have any say? Like, well, you know, from our planning perspective, we think it would be better here. I mean, I guess
if you can tell me the road, maybe I can get it.
Oh, I was talking about Battle in particular. Oh. But I know, like, for example, on, well, I guess I, that's too.
We had some input on that ballot discussion.
I knew you guys have input on those. Obviously, you guys aren't working in a bubble, and they're working in a bubble. You guys know what's going on generally, but
generally, those are on the fringe that are, you know, we're going to have some discussion with them at that point. But if you look too far out from the CATSO, there's not a lot of those streets that are arterial defined, you know, when you get too far on the fringe of the city from an arterial standpoint. I can't think of a lot of them, but there are some. In a lot of cases, they don't get built. They are dedication of right-of-way so that they can be built. But
yeah, so, I mean, that's another thing, making the developer build it or just dedicate the right-of-way, you know. What kind of say do you guys have in that? And then you get to annex it, and then now you got this right-of-way with no road in it. I mean, theoretically, I don't know any specifics now. But
A lot of times, if it's out in the county, that's out. I don't think we have a chance for some discussions.
You don't really get in there. I don't know. Maybe that's not a big deal.
I don't think it happens very often. I think that's kind of unique for a county to have too many of those.
The county's bound in the same way the city's bound. If they build X Road, they need to build it to the standard that CATSO.
But it's kind of, the part is there's a lot of it that's really amorphous as far as they draw these lines, and it's like, well, that line's going, could go 100 feet this way or 200 feet that way. Is it on this property or this property? Are you crossing the creek with a bridge? Are you going around into three other properties to avoid having to build a bridge? You know,
a lot of discussion.
So, I mean, and right now, like Battle got built in the county, you know. So, I mean, you guys were part of that, and that was pretty close. We knew it was probably, well, I mean, I know you guys were working on that with them. But
yeah.
Is there a formal review that you guys do with CAT, or just CATSO doesn't have their own review, you know?
No, and CATSO does not have a standard, really. It's whatever jurisdiction that it's adopted in.
And I might be seeing a problem that's not a problem.
I don't, it's not really been, I mean, you know, when you have these developments that you're talking about, there is a lot of negotiation with the development and the city or the county from a transportation network standpoint. And does it make sense to where it's going, and then the connectivity?
And so we guide a lot of that. We don't know exactly where the line is, the road is. I'm like, well, it's not on my property. It would be better if it was over on this property.
And yeah, we have those discussions. So
yeah. Okay. I don't think I have anything more on that. I mean, and there might not be any recommendation in that.
Well, let's see on three there though. Does everyone know what the urban service area is? What it consists of, and how it relates to the city limits.
I know generally what it is, but I don't know.
It's defined in the Columbia Imagine document, and there is it is exactly defined as close as they can, and it is they go in here in this recommended policies that you encourage growth within the urban service area or discourage growth outside, I guess more exactly, I think they say they discourage growth outside of the urban service area. And it's due to, is there adequate infrastructure in this area? Can you connect it by gravity flow to the sewer system? Do you have to build a bridge to build a road or something? Or is there environmentally sensitive areas in this area or something? You know, I can't think of everything offhand on what went into defining that boundary, but those are generally, I think, what are the.
But it has a specific line. I knew that. If you asked me to draw the line on the map, I couldn't do it. But I generally.
Sometimes it's congruent with the city limit line, you know, because they don't. I mean,
they're not contiguous, and it. I think it has value to look at it to see the. Whether you're in the northwest, northeast, southwest, or southeast quadrant, where that urban service area boundary is compared to the city limits. And I think I'm recalling, too, this, that the city or the council uses the urban service area as a means of making determinations of whether that the city would go into that? Is that outside the city limits, or? Yes. Yes, I am. Please.
Done through planning, the urban surface area. Our comments about it were, we do a lot of planning outside that area, and I'll just use the CATSO boundary. It's basically a 2-mile ring around this outside of the city. It's called the metro area. We plan for transportation in that area. We have a master plan for sewer that goes way outside that to the north, drainage areas that goes up to almost Rocky Fork. And so, you know, we do a lot of planning outside of it for infrastructure. What that's for is for development, whether you bring it in the city or not. It's a tool for the council to use for annexation, basically, John.
Okay. That's what.
And it takes into consideration, if memory serves, things like Turkey Creek, Gans Creek, as being environmentally problematic.
Sensitive areas.
Yeah, but as I say, I mean, the infrastructure, I feel like most of the time, or in a lot of cases, is not a deterrent to develop outside of the urban service area. Yet you've got this document that has this urban service area that says the city shouldn't be developing outside of it, or somewhat.
Yeah, maybe you're on to something there. Maybe one of the things that we should think about.
I mean, obviously, some spaces it's not congruent with the city, so you can't annex it yet. But
that's
so
right. But is what you're suggesting, in terms of a recommendation, whether or not we should recommend that the council I know they take what they do very seriously. I'm not suggesting that they don't, but that they put more weight on the urban service area boundary?
Less weight. That's in my mind, that's what I was thinking.
That it's too important today in their thinking?
I can't speak to how they're thinking, but
right.
In the Columbia Imagine document, and I haven't read it extremely thoroughly, I just know I've read it in places, you know, find one. Policy to establish an urban service area, limit or discourage growth beyond the established area, you know. That's what it says right there. So I don't necessarily agree with that.
Okay, so what's the recommendation?
And I think that's the goes up with number one, encourage annexation and development.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe I could throw in the urban service area, not be limited to the urban service area or something. In that recommendation. I would probably recommend that everybody reads exactly how they came up with this before you agree or disagree with my interpretation of what I think.
Something like consider but not be bound by the urban service area?
Yeah, and they're not bound by it now. I mean, there's nothing binding about the club we imagined, but it is out there, and the planners like to use it as a, you know, reference for their opinions. Number four, I mean, if we're done with number three, I think number four, I attached it today. I didn't have it on hand when I sent out the original one, or this document, but the city has a public works improvement or public input list, and I think it's pretty thorough. I don't necessarily see anything wrong with it. I was just curious. We had said something about public input and having a matrix or something in the stormwater recommendations, and I know Katrina is probably interested. She's not here today, maybe you too, about her house. You know, she's been wanting a project to be done, and, you know, is she satisfied with the public input in the process to get, you know, the project done? Or is there additional things we could do, like make a matrix or something? I mean, they have this process. They have it listed out with a whole bunch of different steps, and I don't personally necessarily see anything that is glaring wrong with it or anything that I would make a recommendation to change it, but I'm not one of the ones that has these problems that's been trying to get a project done for 10 years. We can hold that until, or does anybody have any? I don't know what else to say about that, really.
Well, once the project is either brought, is in a ballot, and it's time for it to come forward in a CIP or capital improvement plan, whether it be year two or five.
So that's after it's been?
So after it's been identified. When we say initiate the project, that means, okay, this project is now due for funding to start this year. So then we get the wheel going on following the improvement process. We'll set up the IP meeting and get it to a stage where we can say, okay, you had identified this project. Here's staff's interpretation of what the improvement should be or how the public.
It's kind of a more of a public. Specific to that project.
Sorry,
let's get the public's input on how we make this project happen and make everybody happy.
That's right.
While we're finishing.
But it's not on how to get a project.
Yeah, not
initiated.
Okay.
And I just.
Okay, so maybe do you guys, what is the process for getting a project initiated?
Well.
Just citizen input, like complaints.
Citizen input, maybe a council direction. That's why we have annual funds. If it's not already identified through that ballot, you know, and somebody else has a need or we're going to cost share and we get council approval to spend the money, and then we'll go through this process to figure out exactly what that improvement's going to be based upon public input.
So I guess I'm less concerned about that part of the process. I mean, I'm glad, I think it needs to be there, obviously. I'm just not worried about getting into the details of it. I was more of getting a project initiated. Is the public happy with their input? And we happen to have Katrina on this. And maybe she's one of the only people, hopefully. It's not a common theme.
Okay. And a lot of those, like I said, are done through a list through the ballot or something that's been identified in a CIP that's not been previously funded. And a lot of times projects are identified as a problem somehow along the way, and somebody says, let's make a project of it. It gets put in the CIP, no funding identified.
And or the CATSO sometimes has identified it. Or...
Well, no, CATSO is not going to identify a project. They're going to just identify what a road designation is going to be when we develop in certain areas. But whether
they have improvements on their list of.
Well, when you have federal, when you have to put money, projects in what they call the TIP if you're using federal funds and things like that. And then that's how those are put into a project. And sometimes they're funded, sometimes they're just identified as an unfunded project. So
a TIP is a 3-year document. Mm-hmm,
yeah. Or is it
5-year.
Oh, that's 5. So our CIP is sometimes somebody's wanted a project.
A lot of it rests with city staff's knowledge and experience of evaluating the needs of this project above this project, what needs to be done.
A lot of
the priority.
That's right. A lot of that is. And a lot of it is, and sometimes a need will arise and council will direct us to move forward with something. And that's why we have those
unfunded,
and and then we have the annual funds. Then if a project can be, that is a source that we can use. So this process is really for after it's identified.
Okay.
Then we go through this so that
thanks for
one thing that I probably want to do is talking about her projects. We do have on stormwater a prioritization list, and we score them, and that's how they fall out priority wise. And something could be done that way for all infrastructure. You know, each utility should prioritize what the needs are, so council or the public can see where they fall in the list.
Yeah,
do that with stormwater, and we don't do that with every utility.
You know,
yes, it's in the CIP, but you don't have a priority.
That goes directly to the point that you've made and that Bill's made on several previous points, which is we ought to strive for a greater degree of objectivity. And you say it in here, too. You know, and I think that's one of the, in my mind, it's one of the strongest things that may come out of our work is this some kind of recommendation for a stronger degree of objectivity. Because it's not, it's true of sewer, it's true of roads, it's true of a lot of things. It's hard to do.
Well, I think what John said is a good point. Maybe we should think about adding a recommendation about having an objective evaluation.
Well, don't you mention that in here somewhere? I thought I read that you...
I have a scorecard system. Is that what you're saying?
I think five is different, slightly different. Something like Greg had for came up with the stormwater.
We had a language for that.
Yeah, I think we could adapt that to something similar to this.
Standardized prioritization of projects on the CAP.
Yeah, bam.
Public and transparent so everybody can see how the process works.
Like that, I think that should be something we should put on the list for final.
I don't think, I think in the sewers we didn't specifically say what, we gave some ideas, but we didn't tell them how to do it. We just said it needs to be done. There needs to be a transparent process in how they prioritize the projects.
Stick with that a minute. I think that is huge, and it goes across all of our areas of concern. And I don't want to arrive to a conclusion right now, but it seems to me that maybe we want an overall recommendation which says something like the council should consider a more standard and objective process for determining capital improvements projects generally. Am I going?
I agree.
At the.
Take as like much that. Of the politics out of it.
Yeah, and we say politics. I don't mean that in a bad way, and I know you don't.
No, but no, I mean, but you get different council members, and they take their positions, and have a standardized process. You still can go there if you need to, but at least you have a process that you're consistent with.
Because we've heard that in every single area, haven't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, next one, I guess. So this isn't one that's directly based on the Columbia Imagine policy recommendation or guiding document. And I had copied some, I don't know if you guys saw it, but just some course of our meeting minutes from planning and zoning work session, a couple of them, the one that they had put it forward to have staff come up with some infrastructure scorecard stuff, and then a more recent one where the planners came and said, you know, it's more complicated, like you could imagine trying to evaluate all the costs and short and long-term burdens. I mean, in one scorecard is probably a pretty complicated task. So, but I was still curious on if staff was continuing to move forward with trying to make one or if they had just kind of put that away because it needed to be something more focused or something than just this infrastructure scorecard. I know originally they had used the county's suitability index thing as a guideline, but I think the city wanted to make theirs a lot more robust or take into different factors into it. And then they just, that was in September of 2015. They made that report to planning and zoning.
They were working on it, and I know that our legal had some issues because some of the things they were saying, that a piece of property may be substandard, and then a developer might construe that as being less valuable because it didn't have all of the what everybody would call a standard infrastructure. And so it got all tied up in a lot of that legal and definitions and things like that. And I haven't heard of it since then, but that was some of the things that I do remember hearing out of it, that it would imply that somebody's property would be substandard and then therefore the value would then not be. And so it was touching on some things that were, and I knew the intent was to say this piece of property is more readily available to develop than say this one,
kind of,
but
like
how they were designating it was kind of getting into some property rights issues there. So I'm not sure if they took it too much further than that.
Kind of like what kind of builds off what we're saying in the last one. Have you know something you can bring forward in front of council that's objective, saying should we or should we not, you know?
Well, I think
prove this plan or whatever.
I think it was a guide. I thought it was supposed to be a tool for developers to see whether certain pieces of property are more, ready to develop because it had the infrastructure in place versus this one over here. And so it was going to give them kind of a tool, but I'm not sure how far it went after some of the things I've heard about this property right issue. So I'm not sure where it's at. We can follow up with planning for you and let you know.
Yeah, I'd be curious on what your guys' current city staff status is of it.
Okay.
And then I guess with the task force, are we interested in having a document, or should we make a recommendation to keep on pursuing an infrastructure scorecard that could be used to rate the appropriateness of development? Obviously there's the legal hurdles or whatever, but in theory I have mixed feelings because I don't like somebody saying this property isn't appropriate for development. I mean, any property, I mean, unless it's a, you know,
and
in Rockbridge State Park or something, I think it's developable.
Right, and that's, I think you got a hint of where some of the issues were with
yeah,
with that designation. So I think, I'm not sure how far it went, but I can report back on where the status
sure.
of that were. Okay.
Hey, I hope we would adopt your number 6. I can't see anything wrong with the way it's written right there now.
And there was also in that same planning zoning work session and about the infrastructure scorecard, they're kind of using this GIS system to try to base some of their analysis on, and the GIS manager, I can't remember his name.
Matt Gerke.
There's somebody else in there. Fleck? Fleck? John Fleck made the, I don't know, I'm sure Gerke was involved. But he was talking about different things. He wanted to build on the system and have it integrated with some of the other GIS systems in the city. And I definitely think that's something we should.
I think we had something similar in the sewers.
We did.
And I think the input would be that the city, the county, and the university that all run GIS systems integrate those so that they're sharing data in the same format so that they can all value from that.
Yeah, interdepartmental and governmental.
In fact, maybe this wants to be another one which applies generally across the board rather than simply to sewer or stormwater or roads, but just generally.
I agree.
Is everybody on board for that?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I agree.
So this one, I don't know if we want to get into the details, and I don't want to get into the details of specific projects, but
you're talking about 7 now.
7, okay, yeah, I'm sorry, I moved down. But I think just by the nature of I-70-63 intersection is the biggest intersection in Columbia, the most people go through it, and it's not a great intersection, honestly, and I have to go through it a lot. Depends on the time of day. Yeah, it's actually not bad if you're like 3 o'clock at night, 3 a.m. it's really expensive. It's not in Columbia's jurisdiction. I don't know what we could say or make a recommendation. I do personally think it needs to be improved, and it would be an asset to Columbia, but I don't know. I don't know what everybody else thinks about that.
I think you've hit on something, Cody. I think, is this something, I look to you all to maybe make a recommendation, should we approach larger projects like this as a single issue to vote on, whether we, what do we want to do with it? Instead of lumping them all together like we do our CIP, which are smaller projects, because we're spending $40 million on roads in 10 years? Yeah. $60 million, so that's $6 million a year we're spending on roads in the next 10 years. So we can't do a $10 million project, much like 7063. We can't even participate in it if we wanted MoDOT to do it. And so should we be putting things on a single opportunity for voters to vote on, say, yes, this is what we want to do? So that's what I'd like for you to look at. As far as large projects, should they be singly voted on? So.
Not the design.
The whole project.
The
design,
concept.
Construction, I mean, everything.
Funding.
How do we fund those large projects? Because we can't take them on in a CIP. They just cost too much.
Yeah. I think I heard from MoDOT. I was talking to them about it, and one of the guys was like, yeah, the estimates are up near $100 million to do what they think needs to be done for,
you know. But our portion, if we wanted them to do something, you know, we would have to pay $10 or $20 million of that $100 million.
Yeah.
We have no way to do that.
You're saying like something like, shall the city of Columbia adopt a 1/8 cent property or sales tax for the construction or the renovation of the connector?
And pay it all, and
like
pay our portion, not for perpetuity, but just to pay our portion.
I get that. Right.
The single use type tax.
That's an interesting. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, because it's never on any lists. It's not even on the CATSO list if you look
and
at
it's
it.
Not only just for roads, it would be for any large project, basically.
Yeah. Like
so
stadium
our,
extended or.
If we were to make a recommendation, it might look something like this. The council should consider placing extra large or bonus or huge or a jumbo capital improvements project on the ballot as single issue project, something along those lines. And again, across the board, right? Not just road, but sewer.
Sure.
Right. Because there's going to come a time, you know, we have to talk about a power plant or a new sewer plant, or, I mean, there are hundreds of millions of dollars. And so you don't want to drag that down with all your other little projects that you want to do. We were lucky with the sewer plant. We did a $70 million or $60 million expansion with a $77 million ballot. It passed, but, you know, it could have drug everything back.
So that's a third general kind of recommendation that we're thinking about then.
I don't know if we're going to make it through all these.
Cody, one thing we might do is jump to the question of the development fee. Because many of these things that you ask here are really good and interesting questions that don't necessarily lead to a particular specific recommendation.
Yeah, that's the problem with a lot of them.
Sure. And if you don't ask the questions, we don't get to the offshoots that actually end up with an answer. But I think that one of the bigger questions before us is, should we make some kind of recommendation to the council with regard to a change in their approach to development fees?
I agree.
Do other people agree that that's like the gorilla?
Were you successful on getting anybody from the development community to come and speak to us?
I was not successful or unsuccessful because I didn't call them, but I will call them. I'll call them before our next meeting.
I think that'd be important if we make some kind of outreach to them.
Yeah.
CMDC.
So I think it'd be interesting to hear from the developers themselves on what they see. I know we hear Cody's opinion, do a lot of development work, but some of the other larger developers in the community get the fee.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for all the developers.
Right, so
I get in trouble.
I don't know if we can invite
Tony can.
Developers to come in and speak to them.
Yeah, I want to have a job.
Yeah, it'd be good to hear from their perspective.
Okay, let's
what
put
works
them,
and what doesn't work.
Then maybe we should put them on the agenda for next meeting and hold that discussion until after they weigh in. That makes sense?
Probably be a good idea.
All right.
Ask them to give alternate proposals if they're opposed to increasing development fee.
Yeah.
Ask them to give alternate proposals if they're opposed to increasing development fee on where they propose to get the money.
Yeah.
Good, that's a good thought. Yeah, because I don't want to just waste our, I mean, no offense to anybody, but I don't really want to sit through a meeting and listening to why we shouldn't have higher development fees and then leave and still and not have having anyone's input on we need the money where should it come from.
That's right. But we ought to hear what they have to say about
right.
it. I don't know, like Ian, I don't necessarily feel compelled to agree with Ian on everything that he said, but we listen to him.
Right.
And they may say things that we didn't think about.
Can someone remind me the net zero project? I can't remember what that is.
Net zero projects are projects that, for example, wouldn't take any electricity off of the city's system because they would produce their own electric through solar energy or other methods.
It rings a bell, and yet that doesn't.
Yeah, there was a house recently built over
yeah,
on.
I mean, that's kind of what.
Oh, maybe I read about zero. It in the paper or something.
But a lot of those net zero houses still grid connected though. They use zero energy, but they're using the grid to push energy in and out of. Initially, using the grid as their battery, so right. You can't just take the development fee away unless that property is fully self-sustainable without grid connections.
100% of the time. Because what they do is right. They produce power when you don't need it.
Right.
So well, we don't charge anything
topic,
for electric.
That's really
now
a topic
anyway,
probably
right?
More for our electric discussion later on is if someone puts in a zero energy building, it's truly, it may not use energy, but it pushes it out and then brings it back.
So it's strictly in regard to electric is what you're saying?
Mostly, yeah.
Okay.
If we kind of hit on that with stormwater, though, a little bit?
Maybe that's where we talked about it.
Or as far as a
yeah, we talked about having some kind of like credit for treating your own stormwater
right.
Or something
okay.
Like that.
I do think it's something to wait till electrical. It's more so for the electrical side.
You don't think they should get any kind of? It shouldn't matter at all to the development fee.
Not in regards to roads.
Yeah, which is what the development fee goes to essentially.
Right.
But there is no development fee for electric.
No.
You wouldn't have any.
And there currently is reductions. There's no infrastructure connection fee for electric. So.
Yeah. So where's the benefit? Or what's the city doing to encourage net zero projects? Maybe they don't want to encourage net zero projects.
My own biased view of this whole net zero thing is that it's deceptive because the fact that somebody produces over the course of a year the same number of kilowatts as they use is largely irrelevant if they produce the kilowatts when kilowatts coming out of the grid are effectively free and they demand power when they're at their high. If you demand power on July 15th at 3:30 in the afternoon and you produce power at April 20th at 2 o'clock in the morning, It's the net is the same, but the effect on the grid still forces the building of peakers. John, is that?
Oh yeah, that's always the question.
Okay, everybody's all right. You don't want to hear me rant about that.
I liked it.
Okay.
So what's the summary of the development fees for roads?
Well, I think we're going to invite the developers and then talk about it at, when they get done.
Writing.
Well, the Central Missouri Development Council, are they still an entity?
Yeah, they're still in existence, right?
I mean, that would be one place that they used to have a.
Brian Troth is a representative, isn't he?
Yeah, they used to have a representative that would, you know, get lobby or whatever he does.
He left.
Stamper used to do that once upon a time, but yeah, he's gone. But these guys know who it is, who we should.
It's Brian Truth, isn't it? Troth? Yeah.
Billy Sapp used to drive that pretty much, but. Okay. I'll call Randy and get him to make some recommendations for a couple people to come and chat. Do you think?
Randy is a great idea, yeah.
Okay.
I recall the two issues at hand. One is, are the fees correct? And the negotiated piece. So that's really the one that's so challenging, because it's an undetermined cost to develop.
They don't know until they get in the middle of it.
Hard to plan when you don't know what that's going to be.
Is there any interest? I know early on when we started meeting, Carl Scala attended one or two meetings, and he was willing to come to give a discussion of his trip generation methodology. Do we have any interest in furthering our understanding of that?
So I brought that up. I will just quickly speak on that. So he still is, I assume, a big proponent, and I think he's starting to even see that maybe it's too complicated or it hasn't catching on, because he had a full minority report that was very detailed and having a bunch of breakdowns and a very exact science on how to get development fees based on how much traffic each development generates. It kind of got condensed down to in 2014 when they had the very basic low traffic generation and high traffic generation of $1.50 versus $2 for a square foot for a development fee. You know, that was still roughly based on traffic generation. So I feel like we've gone, he's kind of tried it, he's watered it down, and it didn't pass. So I'm almost like, I feel like it's almost dead. You know, should we keep looking at this, even though it's been tried, you know, since 2011 and then the ballot issue, or should we look at a new approach? Like, I kind of like Ian's approach of saying, you know, how much money should we be spending and what's the allocation we think it is, and then just, you know, how many square feet of building are there each year, you know, just very roughly, you know, based on real numbers, but, you know, you come up with that equates to $2 a square foot is what would be a fair proportion or whatever we determine or the council determines is a fair proportion. Of course, as I said in that, now I'm just going over my
the trip generation thing, that ground's been plowed, it would seem to me.
Kind of what I was thinking. I wanted to bring it up because it was such a big thing in the last 4 years, but yeah, I think I'm willing to let it go.
I believe, I'm skipping a little bit here, I believe we should include 12 for sure, as you have written it.
Yeah, I don't know that, Zach, you used some other word for the internet sales tax. Didn't you say a compact or?
Interstate compact.
Yeah, I didn't know if I had the right wording, so we can add or
it's
whatever.
The words you have work.
Okay. Do we want to speak on what they should we add any wording about and direct that internet sales tax to streets or
Or just leave
Let's
it at
get
that.
It. I mean, what you wrote is clear. It's simple. It's a good sentence.
Let's worry about that later.
Yeah.
Everyone will get their piece of the pie.
Everybody, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, once you understand what's going on, I mean, why wouldn't you want to make that happen?
And?
But it's the roads that are specifically suffering right now, correct?
Is there's a reduction in what we're getting because a lot of people are buying stuff online. Yeah.
And that another one, that's another one that is in the general category rather than the specific of electricity or sewer or stormwater, because it affects all areas.
Yeah.
And this is separate from the licensing of the boats and the cars and...
Yes.
Yep. Okay, now, I'm still researching, and I've contacted the county clerk in Cooper County and trying to create my understanding of what they did over there to vote on e-commerce to... like sales tax. I think that they are doing that.
They can actually collect it themselves?
But they are. But I'm trying to work with the county clerk to go through and define the process and how they do that. Pardon?
Cooper County?
Yeah, Cooper County.
Cooper County is collecting separate? That's amazing.
Well,
I'm not
well, again,
saying you're wrong, but I'm... if that's true, that's wonderful.
Something we should look at.
You bet.
Yeah, it's ballot propositions 1 and 2, and it's been a few years back. And I remember going to a Kiwanis Inner Club over at Boonville, and Eddie Bricker, is it Bricker or Brickner, gave a presentation on that.
So they found a way to do that on a county-by-county basis.
Pardon?
They found a way to do that on a county-by-county basis.
That's the way I understand that it can be done, yeah. Huh.
If so, that's...
Let's do that.
Oh, yeah, if that's true, that's wonderful.
Anyway, I've got to study his... I've got the information here. I just have to study it more to... And they call it, Chris, a use tax. They said the out-of-state use tax is on the April 2nd ballot.
No, you're on the, that's on the trailers and the,
okay.
On the cars. That's the county, many of the counties and cities have adopted separate use taxes by ballot after the Supreme Court decision. That's not internet sales tax. That's the implementation of the use tax.
Right.
Your 15, Cody, all goes to effectively development fees, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I am glad we are going to bring in somebody from the development community to talk on this, because I think it's very important that they be, if not supportive, at least not like actively against like they were in 2014, if we're actually going to change something. Because, I mean, it's going to have to go to a vote.
Ultimately, you got to make a deal.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll make a recommendation to council. We just want to make sure that recommendation is sound enough for the developers that they're going to be able to...
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Exactly right.
Right. We don't have to come up with exact details.
No, that's right.
At least a concept that they're comfortable with.
If we talk to them, we'll be closer to where the sweet spot is.
That's the point of our recommendations, is to be recommend something that's achievable.
Which others of these point to specific recommendations?
That one seems like, what is this, every 5 years, every 10? So it was got 2015 or 2014, it got renewed. So it's a ways out, but I mean, still, I think it should be included. Okay, yeah, that's right.
Is that the same quarter cent that funds public safety? But half of that goes to public safety, and half goes to...
So where I hear us is we're going to include in our recommendations 18, 12, 6, 1,
4 in some general sense of an objective evaluation to prioritize.
Yes. I started to play with language on that, which I will send around. Something like the council should consider the adoption of a standard and objective criteria of standard and objective criterion for the selection of infrastructure projects in all the areas covered by the task force study. Something like that.
Specifically on the CIP list? Or no, do we not need to go that far?
Well, we don't want them just to be on this CIP list. We want them to be generally, don't we? Whenever they consider capital improvements.
It goes from the CIP list to the adopted budget.
That's right. To be included in the CIP. But,
yeah. I think it's understood with or without the CIP wording.
Well, I better keep.
Yeah, there's some other things that maybe are discussion points, but I don't really have a good direction on where a recommendation is going with them, like 17 or 11, but.
If you do.
I can think on it. You can make further, yeah. I was going to say, I think we're probably getting close to wrapping up, but I had left this to be compiled or whatever for the 2011 Infrastructure Task Force recommendation status. We had talked about it previously in a meeting. We went over each of the recommendations, and I didn't take very good notes on that, I don't think, but I think we had listed what we kind of wanted to say with each of those. I don't know if somebody had those and wanted to write that.
Okay, any more on this document then?
Somebody please go back and nutshell number one for me again. What are we saying with that?
I don't think we have the precise language, but I think it's something like this. Is we recommend that the city encourage annexation and development to promote economic growth, to retain taxes and fees, and to promote appropriate land use. In the area currently outside the city limits, as Bill suggested. Is that about where we are, Cody?
Yeah, I think so.
I think you're concerned about not limiting to the urban
Service area.
There might be some additional bullet points I'd want to add, but...
Okay.
But didn't we then have discussion that the streets and sewer, the costs for some of that is a burden? And this, the Columbia Imagine document talks about looking at costs of that.
Yeah, the...
I just don't want to contradict ourselves if we're saying...
Columbia Imagine document.
Do encourage annexation, but it's so expensive, maybe we shouldn't encourage annexation.
They speak out of both sides of their mouth.
And also, for number one, we're going to take time. Dave is going to provide the sewer policy for annexation, and we're going to reflect on that.
I mean, that could be good support for this recommendation to encourage development. I mean, it's kind of not a real specific recommendation.
No.
Something to get them thinking, or to maybe, you know, as a task force, we think is something that should be at the forefront when you're considering, you know, improvements and stuff that, you know, if there is annexation to the city, it is the city that's benefiting from this and, you know, all the infrastructure that goes along with it. You can't just avoid infrastructure by not annexing. I mean.
Right. Just because you don't annex doesn't mean you don't get the problem, because you do.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else with the document?
The recommendation status. And then there's, I just put some placeholders and some of those that I'll try to expand on for the next meeting. As far as, I wanted some wording on what the actual, you know, half cent transportation sales tax, 60%, 18%, 22%, blah, 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 capital improvement sales tax. Just kind of expand those out just to give an overview of the basis for the recommendations.
We're going to wait on development fees. What about integrated management plan?
Well, I think. Okay, I've gone through and read the engineering services contract 2 or 3 times, and then I've also read the integrated plan scope of work another 2 or 3 times, and one could walk away from that, and there's parts of it that you could contend that there's what comes out of that plan is similar to what would come out of this task force, and the benefit from the integrated management plan is that the way it's structured is that there's a considerable amount of analysis that's going to go on and data collection that is going to be the driver to create and support the recommendations that come out of it, and that guiding force of the IMP is compliance with water quality through EPA and DNR. But on the other hand, there are sections of the plan that are going to deal with capital improvements and as well as financing and funding. And but what I see with IMP, that the contract is for a duration of 730 days, and I just can't see us prolonging our existence for another 730 days. And the way I took what David Zorrell was in his written memorandum was that this task force should know that the recommendations that come out of this task force for stormwater and sewer will be critically considered in the IMP.
Okay, does that lead to that there's nothing really for us to do with regard to IMP?
No, right. I think that's, or another option could be, Chris, that given the length of the IMP development, that and that it's going to consider sewer and stormwater, and it's in far more great depth than what we are be considering, that the IMP, as I see it, that there's no citizen participation other than the workshops, and that it's that could it be better served that the IMP in its relationship to this task force, that an option would be that a number of the task force members be attached as an ad hoc to the IMP development, or where that a good example would be like with Katrina and the difficulty that they have over on Agin Street, that she would have the assurance that that voice would be heard and considered in the depth of the development of the IMP, and that and that the question would become, should there be more citizen participation in the IMP?
Maybe the specific recommendation is something like, we recommend that the council provide for some specific avenue or tool for citizen input into the IMP, hearings or something.
There's a community outreach section listed in the scope of work.
Well, okay, the different...
It has provision in that scope to form a committee in addition to the workshops.
What did you say, David?
I said it has a provision in that scope to form a committee, potentially.
Oh, okay.
In addition to the workshops as part of the public outreach.
Yeah.
So it's got a provision for public input.
Well, I think there's...
As in the scope, we've kind of left it a little bit broad, and it has a potential to have a committee similar to this committee that would be strictly related to that, but it also has public workshops.
And see,
and those are required as part of the to meet the EPA requirements of public improvement, or public involvement is required.
Yeah,
it's the section where it says task four, develop and implement community outreach program.
Yes.
There's a whole developed section on that.
And see, the difference is that I see a difference between the committee being they will participate in the actual meetings or be in attendance of the meetings with the consultant and the city staff. And I see that far different than having public hearings and workshops, where this committee hears and see what's going on and seeing how the discussions go, and then they can provide their input at that point and digest what's going on, versus just coming to a workshop or an interested party meeting and so on. A good example is that I've been involved in two or three electrical integrated resource plans, and that committee is like the Water and Light Advisory Board, maybe some ad hoc members of the, let's just take for example the what's going on now with the Water Integrated Resource Plan, which is starting to get underway. Well, there is a citizen committee that will work with the city staff and the consultant directly. And that committee is the Water and Light Advisory Board, two ad hoc members. One is the sustainability director, and maybe have one from the planning department. And then there'll be four appointments from the city council to be a part of that 10-person committee. And then that committee will work with, there'll be in attendance at all the meetings with the consultant and the city staff, and then provide input as we go along, which is far different than having the consultant and the staff work together. Then they have a workshop, and the consultant and the staff create a discussion of what they're doing and asking for input, but it's hard to input at that juncture unless you're really into that.
You want to come back with some specific language on a recommendation on the subject of citizen input into the management plan?
No, I think it's, from what I hear,
it's all covered.
I think it's all covered.
So we don't need to do anything.
Do you have a question for, what is the IMP committee? Who's on that committee? That city, that's not been defined. And Vermont indicates you could have a permanent community membership on that committee, in addition to city staff and your engineer and everything else. Well, just for the committee time period.
Right. And that's, again, would to me, would suffice. And you get citizen input internally rather than trying to get it at these workshops.
But you don't think we need to?
No, the only thing that I see that would even be a consideration is that the IMP is the data and the analysis is far deeper than what we will ever do, and that the result of that is would be superior. But again, we be mindful of what David has told us in his memorandum, is that Chris, they're going to take our recommendations and that will be integrated into the IMP development. And so it may be that when they flesh out and take our recommendations, that our end recommendations may not due to the analysis and the data that they do or gather and complete, that it's not may not be recommended.
Okay.
So.
Excellent point, John.
Pardon?
Excellent point.
Yeah,
I thought it was well put.
Any citizens want to make any? You're the entire that.
You outlasted everybody.
Okay, so I want to make a point here, though. I want, in terms of our group here, our task force, that what we did tonight, Mr. Chairman, was we demonstrated that our energy level was higher than the student energy level. and I don't have any data to back it up other than that we endured and that there's an indication that we could have worn them out, but we don't know what's going on in their life. They may have been studying for tests and so on and may have reached their limit as to what they could absorb.
I applaud them for not snoring.
Yeah. But we are thankful that they came.
Yeah, we are thankful that they came.
Chris?
Yes, sir.
At our first task force meeting, I discussed a motion that I was thinking about making.
Which I...
Expanded task force's charge recommended to council.
Yes.
I would like to make that motion next meeting if everybody's okay. If everybody's going to be in attendance.
All right.
Make sure everybody can be here.
I think the time you and I talked about is here. You've been very open about
patient.
We talked about February and patient, and it'll be March.
I'd like to expand the motion to include broadband internet service.
Okay, let's put it. I'll put it on the agenda for the next.
I'll send everybody an email outlining the motion.
Perfect.
When is our next meeting? Anybody know off the top of
when is our next meeting?
March 15th.
No. Oh, I will not be at the next meeting for a multitude of reasons. I'm going to have to choose one. This was not in the running.
This is what?
This meeting was not in the running, but I have two other things going on that night that I'll have to
as far as everybody knows, we'll be here to April 13th meeting. That's the one following.
Is that the one, the next one after March?
Yes. Good.
It'd be here.
We have March 15th and April 13th, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll plan on April 13th if we're going to be here. I'll plan on making a motion.
April 13th is
April
the next
13th.
One? Wednesday? That's okay.
And, you know, it's possible if the council, because I know that Ian was on that again, it's possible the council will meet.
Well, we may not have a new council, but I definitely have a new mayor. We may not have a new council, but we'll definitely have a new mayor.
That's right. That's right. We may do it without you then.
That's okay.
All right. We'll do it in March. I mean, next in how many
April
days
13th?
From now? Yeah.
March.
March 15th.
March 15th.
All right. We're adjourned. Let's go home.